I don't know about you, but shutdown makes you look at things in different lights. Because, there are lots of things that you can't regularly do. The things that were an ordinary part of our life 2 years ago are now seem to be extraordinary. They seem to be distant past memories, or maybe we had flashes of them earlier in the year when we weren't in lockdown. But they still, after we've been in lockdown for so many weeks now, it seems like they are again strange and distant in the past. And so we look at them from a different point of view. Wistfully, maybe, glad, maybe, longing, maybe, just hanging out till we can get to back to doing those particular things, whatever they are. But not only are there things that we might look at like we want to get back to them or re-engage with them, but things have taken on different and fresh meanings. So, for example, I don't know about you, but many of us have probably gone for more walks with people, intentional walks with people from different families or different households or whatever over the last few months than maybe we have in a long, long time. And those walks have taken on different meanings. They're not just a walk for exercise, they're not just a walk to stretch your legs, but now they have a meaning of this is a chance and this is a little bit of freedom that I have. This is a thing that I'm allowed to do. Or this is almost the only way that I can connect with a dear friend who we would normally do lots of things together, but the only way we can do that now is that we can go for an exercise walk together down a particular bike path or through a park or whatever else. And so these things, even the simple act of going for a walk, has taken on a different meaning. It's almost like our lives have been stripped back. And when our lives get stripped back, we find out what are the things that are really important, what are the things that our lives are actually built on. And so they have different meanings, and there's a reevaluation of even these simple things in our lives. And that can happen for us spiritually as well. And this morning, I think we were planning, at least I hope it happened, that our kids' church live stream went ahead fine this morning. What we're doing with our kids' church curriculum is that every year with the curriculum we're using at the moment, they go through a whole sort of journey through the Bible of God's big story from Genesis through to Revelation. And they're starting in Genesis now, and they'll be heading through to the end of Revelation over the coming weeks and months, not doing everything, but doing bits of it along the way. And so I thought it'd be good for us, and I know we've done it quite recently as well, but I thought in the context of our kids engaging with Genesis, I thought it'd be good for us to engage with Genesis again this morning. So I just want to read Genesis chapter 1, and then I want to give us some reflections about that. But before we read that, we need to keep in mind some features that were obvious to people in the ancient Near East when they're reading this passage, but are less obvious to us. And that's all of the allusions and references to temples. And this is a bit like, and I can't remember whether I've used this analogy before, but this is a bit like a family tree. Now, not everyone will have a family tree, as in a specific tree in the backyard. Yes, that's our family tree. But everyone has a family tree in the way of talking about a family tree is the network of relationships between, parents and grandparents and great-great-grandparents and great-great-great-great-grandparents, etc. And we use the features of a tree to describe our relationships in our family networks. And the writer of Genesis uses the features of a temple to describe some important features of creation. And there are in Genesis chapter 1, there are four things that resonate with temples. Firstly, is the 7 days. Back in the ancient Near East, temples were built, the stories of temples being built over 7 days, of being inaugurated over 7 days, of being rededicated in annual feasts that lasted 7 days. And then we see that God places an image into, when they built a temple, they would place an image into the temple. That was the last thing that they did. And the image was something that represented God in that place. And then the temple was regarded as a resting place or in a residence for God. And then when we come to Genesis, we'll see on the fourth day, there's reference to the greater and lesser lights. And the word there is the same word that's used in Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers to refer to the lamps in the tabernacle, which is a mobile temple. And so Genesis 1 is looking at creation through the lens, if you like, of a temple, which is a place that connects heaven and earth, is a place where God resides, and is a place where there is an image that represents or reflects the presence of God. Let's read. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. And God said, "Let there be a vault between the waters to separate water from water." So God made the vault and separated the water under the vault from the water above it. And it was so. God called the vault sky, and there was evening and there was morning the second day. And God said, "Let the water under the sky be gathered in one place, and let the dry ground appear." And it was so. God called the dry ground land and gathered the water he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants and trees on the land that bear fruit with seed in it, according to their various kinds." And it was so. The land produced vegetation, plants bearing seeds according to their kinds, and trees with fruit with their seeds in it according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good, and it was evening and there was morning the third day. And God said, "Let there be lights in the vault of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them serve as signs to mark sacred times and days and years. And let them be lights in the vault of the sky to give light on the earth." And it was so. God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. God set them in the vault of the sky to give light on the earth, to govern the day and the night, and to separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning the fourth day. And God said, "Let the waters teem with living creatures, and let the birds fly above the earth across the vault of the sky." So God created the great creatures of the sea and every living thing with which the waters teemed and that moves about in it according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. God blessed them and said, "Be fruitful and increase in number, and fill the waters in the sea, and let the birds increase on the earth." And there was evening and there was morning the fifth day. And God said, "Let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, the livestock, the creatures that move along the ground, and the wild animals, each according to their kinds." And it was so. God made the wild animals according to their kinds, the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that moved along the ground according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish of the sea and the birds in the sky, over the living livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created mankind in his image, in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in its number, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over the fish of the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground." Then God said, "I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth and of the birds in the sky and all the creatures that move along the ground, everything that has breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food." And it was so. God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening and there was morning the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. This one chapter at the very beginning of the Bible sets the scene for so much. It sets the scene for so many things that play out through the rest of the Bible and play out in your life and my life. And we, in our few minutes we have remaining, we've only got a bit of time to draw out some of those. And hopefully you'll have a chance in your home churches after our live stream to reflect on some of the further implications than that. And the first one is this passage reveals stuff about God. It obviously reveals that God is a creator God, that God likes creating good and very good things. But God is also one who brings order out of chaos. It says at the beginning that the earth was formless and empty, and then God proceeds to give it form and to fill it. God brings order out of chaos. That's one of the things that God has done in this universe, and it's one of the things also that God often does in our lives too. God brings order out of chaos. But then God also gives humans the responsibility to continue that work. God shares a power and responsibility. He delegates responsibility for bringing the order out of chaos to humans as well. God is one who doesn't just grab and hold on to power for himself, but God is one who shares it with others. And there's many other things, I guess, we could reflect on, but they're just two short ones that we could reflect about God. But we also, it's really important that we reflect about this underlying message that you like, that Genesis 1 communicates, that creation is a temple. Creation is like a temple, like a family tree describes the relationships in a family. That understanding creation as a temple describes really important features of creation. And the first one is that it's a place where God rests. It's a place where God resides. When we go outside, we are walking into a sacred place. And just as going for a walk with a friend has had a deeper meaning, a meaning of freedom, a meaning of connection in these lockdown times, we also need to be people who, when we walk outside, have a changed perspective on where we're going. It's like we're going into the most awesome cathedral. Cathedrals have this ability to draw our eyes upwards, to give us a sense of the magnitude and scale of things, that where we are small, but there's a sense of God's presence often in those places. And we need to be people who are shaped that so that when we go outside, we are walking into God's cathedral. Our attention is drawn to God's presence there with us. We are in a sacred place with God. Now, you know, we've all been going out into creation all of our lives, but not all of us, and certainly not all of the time, do we have this sense of going into a sacred place. A place where, as Malcolm shared at the beginning of our service today, it's with his example of the finch flying near his window on a daily basis. God is waiting for us to pay some attention. God is waiting for us. And is delighted when we pay attention. And so the next time you walk into creation, the next time you walk out your front door, the next time you look out the window, remind yourself, I am in God's sacred space, the place where God dwells. I encourage you to develop the thought habit of that being a regular thought all the time. Aim for all the time. That's the goal. But just a little bit more this week, a bit more regularly, I'm aware of God's presence with me when I'm in God's sacred cathedral of creation. You might find yourself singing or humming a song of praise or giving thanks to God quietly in your heart as you walk along, even when you're conversing with a friend, because you can multitask and be aware of God and the people around you at the same time. But here's the other thing. You and I are people who are created in God's image. When you walk with another person, when you meet another person, it doesn't matter whether they're the richest person or the poorest person, whether they're the smartest person or the least educated person, whether they're the well-dressed or undressed, whether they're healthy or whether they're sick, each and every one of them is a person created in the image of God, designed to reflect God's presence into the world around them. C.S. Lewis talked about it in this way. He said, "It is a serious thing to live in a society of possible gods and goddesses. To remember that the dullest and most uninteresting person you talk to may one day be a creature which, if you saw it now, would be strongly tempted to worship, or else a horror and a corruption such as you now meet, if at all, only in a nightmare. All day long, we are in some degree helping each other to one or other of these destinations. It is in the light of these overwhelming possibilities, it is with awe and circumspection proper to them that we should conduct all our dealings with one another. All friendships, all loves, all plays, all politics. There are no ordinary people. You have never talked to a mere mortal. Every person that you have engaged with is a person made in the image of God." And that has personal implications for us, our understanding of who we are. You're not insignificant. It also has implications for who the other person is. Neither are they insignificant. And they're not just an image like we might have an image on the internet. No, this is a deeper understanding of image. This is an image of a person representing or reflecting the reality of God. And this deep understanding is actually what ties together the two great commandments that Jesus highlighted. Love God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind and all your strength. And then love your neighbor as yourself. Why? Because the person next to you is a reflection of God, a reflection of some characteristics. Now, I'm not saying that everybody is like God. I'm not saying that at all. There's bits of everybody which reflect God in some way, and there's other bits which are broken and marred and distorted and don't reflect who God really is. But every person that we meet is made in the image of God. And so if we're loving God, we also need to be loving them. It's the two sides of the same coin. How can you say you love God whom you haven't seen if you don't love your sister or brother whom you have seen? And that connection is first highlighted or is based on this understanding and revelation from Genesis chapter 1. So just as our young people look at the story in Genesis and start another cycle of going through the story of the Bible, hopefully we have looked at again the story of Genesis and looked at it maybe with slightly more profound eyes, if you like, adult eyes, if you like, where we engage with the teaching of this passage at a level that maybe we don't normally do, or maybe our kids haven't yet done. And it talks to us about the nature of God, about the nature of reality, about what it means for us to walk in this creation, and what it means for us to interact with other people who are made in the image of God. People who may have different views with us about lots of different things, including COVID. And so I would encourage you this week to think about the next time you go outside, make a conscious effort to be aware that you're stepping into a cathedral, and that God is waiting to connect with you there. And my prayer is that will become more and more an automatic habit for you, to become aware of God's presence in the cathedral of creation. And it will also, my second prayer is that you become more and more automatic for you to regard anyone that you meet as someone that's created in God's image. And all of those things have their foundation in what's taught in Genesis chapter 1. Let's pray. God, the scarcity of going to walk outside and connect with people has given walking and connecting a deeper meaning. And I pray, God, that as we walk in your creation, that it would have a deeper meaning for us. And Lord, that as we engage with people, sometimes in agreement, sometimes in disagreement, sometimes in love, sometimes in contention, Lord, that you would have a deeper meaning of interacting with a person who's made in your image, however flawed we and they may be. May God, we be confident of your goodness, of you as a God who brings order out of chaos and who creates good things and shares responsibility with the people he's created. So the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up the light of his countenance upon you and give you peace. Amen.